This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 114. Today we speak with Bill Snodgrass and Erica Busey about the challenges of urban ministry. Christ the Center is listener-supported, and we thank everyone who helps to make this program possible. To read more about how you can contribute, please visit reformedforum.org/donate. Welcome to Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, a weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey, and I have with me today Bill Snodgrass, who is pastor of Grace Fellowship. It's an OPC church in Germantown, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I should say. It's great to have you on, Bill.
Thank you.
We also have my wife, Erica Busey, who is director of development at the Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, also in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, right there in Center City. It's great to have you on, Erica. You actually get to use some of this equipment you have to look at every day.
Hi, Camden. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, today we're going to be speaking about the challenges of urban ministry, and it's a little bit different from some of the other topics we've spoken about before, but it isn't. It might seem that way on the surface, but we're going to be speaking about Reformed theology in the city and how it addresses many of the particular challenges that the urban setting presents. And so we're very excited. I'm very excited to be able to speak about this. And it's actually a criticism of the Reformed community often that we don't address the city. We look at denominations like the OPC and sometimes the PCA and others, and people criticize us for being more of a suburban type or even a country parish type church. And that we don't get into the city very often. Now, that's not necessarily true, Bill being a pastor in the city, and we have several other works inside city limits. But it's something we want to address today, because Reformed theology, if we believe it is true, if we believe it is Christianity coming to its own, then it is a solution to the problems that the city faces. And what we're going to find today, I think, is that the city is oftentimes a concentrated place where some things are a little more evident. But the problems that are found in the city are no different from the problems that we find anywhere else. So, Bill, I wanted to ask you first. Now, you have the challenge, and we speak of that in quotes, and we're going to talk about that today, of ministering and pastoring inside the city of Philadelphia in the Germantown area. Can you just tell us about your church and about some of your members and the people that attend, and just in general, sure, some of the things you face day in and day out in pastoral ministry?
Sure. Well, Grace Fellowship is a church that is, the building is actually a new building. They had previously been in another building just down the street, but the church has been there for about 25 years, and we've had a handful of different pastors. It started out as a PCA, OPC church plant, and then things kind of changed from there, and they became an OPC church. We have a mixture of people who come to the church. About 40% of our congregation lives in the Germantown area, and then about 60% from outside. And we have been growing in our efforts to reach out to the community, and we're still fairly small. And there's a number of different factors, I think, that we can talk about in terms of challenges of being in the city. But we're thankful to be there. We have some long-term elders who've been with the church for a long time, and several other members who have been with the church for almost a quarter of a century. So We're very, very thankful to be there, and I've been there about 4 years this month. So.
Now, how many other churches does the OPC have inside city limits?
So
two others? Three others?
Oh, you mean inside Philadelphia?
Philadelphia,
two others.
Yeah, that's right.
Two others. We had one in the Roxborough area, but they are now a PCA church, which is great. And they are just calling a new man to be their pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two other churches in the OPC, Manuel Chapel, which is in South Philadelphia, and Grace Southwest, we call it, which is in Southwest Philadelphia with Pastor Morton.
It's quite amazing when we hear these men speak at Presbytery, or when we talk to them, as we encounter them, just about the amazing things God is doing in South Philly in particular. This is a pretty rough part of town. It can be. Yep. And just to hear about, it really is a depiction of God's inclusion of the Gentiles, of all the nations in you know, Abraham's seed and Jesus Christ. We're seeing people from all over the country. We spoke to Tim Whitmer a couple weeks ago, who is a pastor in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, but a tremendously diverse congregation. I forget how many different nations are represented in his congregation. Right. It's something of dozens and dozens. And it is just amazing in these urban contexts just to see how God has blessed his people and how he has brought in people of all types into one congregation to worship him in spirit and truth.
Right. It's beautiful in the city to see the opportunity to reach people who have already developed relationships with people in their own original homeland, and they have connections already. Some of these people are going back there, and it's just a wonderful opportunity. The fields are white on the harvest in the city.
Mm. Amen. Amen. Now, Erica, would you mind telling us what you do? You work for the Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, which is a member of the Association of Gospel Rescue Missions. Could you just explain to us in general what a rescue mission is? And I think many of our listeners will be familiar because they're often in major cities throughout the United States. And then just explain what Sunday Breakfast does and the type of services that they provide and the types of challenges they meet.
Sure. Well, rescue missions can look different across the country. They can have a lot of different types of ministries. But the most important thing is that rescue missions exist to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the homeless and the disadvantaged. And Sunday Breakfast is actually the third oldest rescue mission in the country. And as you can guess by our name, we started out by serving coffee and rolls on a Sunday morning in 1878. And from there, we grew to where we are today, where we have emergency services. We can house up to 250 men at our facility in Center City, Philadelphia. We also have a year-long recovery program for men. And also in the Germantown area, not too far from Bill's church, we have Wayne Hall, which is a transitional housing program for women and their children.
Hmm. So in general, you will feed people, of course. You also require them to hear a message that is delivered, a gospel message in order to get their food, but you'll clothe them, house them, and it's up to 250 people, you said.
Yeah, up to that many men at night in Center City. Our meals are available to anyone, and we have a gospel message for lunch and dinner every day, and sometimes our chaplains do it, but we also have a lot of pastors and seminary students and people from local churches that come in and share the message.
Mm. Now, what are some of the issues that people are dealing with when they actually come to the mission? What are some of the typical reasons or causes that people end up being homeless and come to seek the services that Sunday Breakfast has?
Well, you can imagine that some of the reasons would include addiction and things like that, but everybody has a different story, and it's surprising how many different places people can actually come from. I remember I worked at a mission in Peoria, Illinois, also before we came out here for Camden Seminary, and there was a man there who'd been there for, I think, 10 years. He'd been on the PGA golf tour, and his wife had been killed in a car accident, and he couldn't cope with it, and he became an alcoholic and lost everything as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And so you never know what the situation might be in someone's life that could cause them to get to the point of desperation where they would show up at the rescue mission's door.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sometimes you are surprised at the, you know, as you mentioned, the PGA Tour representative. Other times you've had people with PhDs mm-hmm. that end up homeless for various reasons. But many times it is those challenges of addiction to alcohol or to certain types of drugs, gambling, which might put somebody on the street.
And mental illness is another large one. And unfortunately, we also have a large percentage of veterans. Up to 25% of the homeless population is veterans.
Mm, my word. So speaking of the city then, obviously there are specific challenges in the urban context. The percentage of people that are homeless, the percentage of people that have at least an addiction that has manifested itself in a very obvious way. is much higher often in these types of settings than you're going to find in suburban or country type or rural settings. Bill, you often, I know, do street evangelism, maybe even street preaching. I don't know if you do that, but what are some of the challenges that you find in terms of finding people on the street and trying to share the gospel with them?
Well, I have done quite a bit of street evangelism. We haven't gone to street preaching yet because Vernon Park is right across the street from our church, but you have to get a permit in order to speak formally in the park. Some have used a bullhorn on the corner, but I think sometimes people hear just part of the message that way, and that's my concern about that. So generally, we talk to people on the streets, and the encouragement is that people will spend up to 20 minutes talking to us on their lunch hour about the gospel. We do find that people make a lot of commitments during that time, and they say a lot of things that they don't necessarily follow through on. And I think what is happening is that a lot of times people, while they want community, they tend to hide at the same time in the city. And the city is a place that where people try to blend in, but at the same time they want community. They want to open up. And in our particular area, we have a lot of people who are influenced by Muslims. We have a lot of people who are influenced by the health and wealth gospel. Mm. We have a lot of people who are hearing from the Jehovah's Witnesses and are frankly getting tired of people canvassing them and soliciting them for all kinds of things. There's a large amount of solicitation that takes place on the telephone and door-to-door in the city. And I think that that tends to make it hard for people to be really interested in grappling with the gospel. They tend to listen and tell you what they think you want to hear at times, rather than really listening. And of course, it takes the Holy Spirit to open someone's ears.
Sure. Now, Erica, you've had certain challenges in the mission based on what it is. You often get many volunteers to come in and deliver these messages, and you have other people that have been at all sorts of different types of churches. I mean, you have so many different people in and out. What are the types of challenges you find there in terms of actually presenting the gospel? You don't do that personally in terms of speaking and delivering sermons, but in your involvement, what have you found as the challenges the mission faces in terms of trying to present a unified and an actual, you know, Christocentric message?
Well, I think there are some similar challenges to what Bill was just describing. It stood out to me, Bill, when you mentioned that health and wealth gospel is one of the things that you come up across. And I hear that sometimes at the mission. And sometimes it's things that, you know, people have been part of that, or they've found a church outside of the mission that they're going to, and they, you know, tie their salvation to this health and wealth gospel. And I can't think of anything more harmful to a homeless person than thinking that their salvation is tied to material blessings. You know, it's difficult. How have you dealt with that and tried to help people come through that sort of particular teaching?
Well, I address that very frequently from the pulpit, and we have a community Bible study on Saturdays, and we do often discuss the role of suffering in the Christian life, the fact that Jesus came to bring a kingdom that's not of this world. This world is passing away. It's a tough sell, I think, because people have become so accustomed to it. And we even have people that are attending our church regularly, listen to a lot of TV programs where people are proclaiming this over the airwaves. And they have so much exposure to it that to hear the message of the New Testament, the entire Bible, is almost a new language to them. And that's the difficulty, is getting them to face the fact that they need to hear from the Word of God, and they need to hear it clearly, and that takes time. It takes being willing to expose yourself to something that sounds foreign to you because you have been taught something completely different.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of our chaplains say that it's difficult to teach some of these guys because they are leery of basically any author who might be dead. If it's not super current, they don't want anything to do with it. And if you start talking about church fathers or anything like that, they're very skeptical of anything that might seem like the establishment. And so something like a Presbyterian church with all of its hierarchies, I mean, not hierarchies, but
it's polity. Yeah.
Sure. That's abnormal and kind of frightening, I think, to a lot of these guys. So how have you dealt with that issue as being a Presbyterian church in Germantown?
That's a great question. And I think we live in a soundbite generation as well. You know, people are just, they are not accustomed to anything that takes longer than a couple of minutes to unfold.
Yeah, exactly.
So it becomes an issue of trying to compress a large amount of biblical teaching into a more compact form, and sometimes that can seem oppressive to people. So what I try to do on Saturdays and in Sunday school and sometimes in prayer meeting is give people a chance to interact with me. And then I try to put things in picturesque language for them. Sometimes I draw it on the whiteboard and just try to help them to make connections so that they can hear the word. And I think what's happening is we're trying to bring people into contact with a world that is heavenly and that has a glory that they cannot see with their eyes, and to help them to see it by coming into contact with it on a regular basis and trying to resaturate them with the truth rather than what they've been saturated with, you know, which is a bunch of different voices that have confused them. So just, I would say interaction and exposure as much as possible. Just trying to come alongside people and find out where they're hearing something else. And they've been increasingly honest with me and telling me some of the challenges, things that they're struggling with. Even in prayer meeting, we have some pretty amazing discussions about demons or whether Christians should be rich, you know, all kinds of things like that.
Wow. That is part of the answer to the health and wealth gospel, is stressing the new creation and the fact that the gospel, you know, brings to bear, you know, spiritual reality. And, you know, it's so much more important and more weighty when we understand there are treasures in heaven. But that brings me to the point of the spirituality of the church. Erica, you mentioned the Presbyterian hierarchy. I think I know what you mean.
Please don't quote me on that.
I know what you meant. And oftentimes we think about, okay, how do we... This is a great example here because we have Bill, who's an ordained minister of the gospel, teaching and working in a church. We have Erica, who's not an ordained minister of the gospel, but working in a worthwhile and very important, and I would even say ministry. I know some people have some misgivings about the use of that word in other places, but it's a parachurch organization. It does not hold the keys of the kingdom. But I wanted to ask you both, maybe I'll start with you, Bill, about what you think the role of the parachurch ministry is, especially in the urban context?
That's a great question, and I think what has happened historically is the parachurch organizations have tried to fill the gaps where they felt the church was not meeting the needs of people or not addressing issues like homelessness or issues like people's need to learn to read, things like that. And you can't have Bible studies, you can't have people really understanding preaching if they can't read. And so there are a lot of different things that are taking place in the city that are part of the parachurch. I guess my ideal situation would be for the parachurch to be serving the church and following people in the direction of the church and participating in the work of making disciples in that regard. It often does seem as though there's a tension, and I notice even in our own congregation, people that have been involved with certain activities for many years, it's kind of a a large portion of their time, their energy, and they love doing it. You know, and sometimes it feels as though they're spending more time that way than doing the activities of the church.
Yeah.
But that's a necessary tension, I think, because the parachurch is trying to do things that, you know, really are perceived as not being addressed by the church. And I think the church needs to spread out and do some of these things well, and the parachurch is assisting in that regard.
Now, I think I want to make a distinction for the listener that I draw, and I think is rather helpful. It's the distinction between a parachurch and a quasi-church. And I think there's a healthy place and a role for organizations such as Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission to do their work and
right.
be considered a parachurch, one who serves the church, kind of like Westminster
right.
Seminary or another seminary. They're not the church either, but they serve the church by training men for
right.
gospel ministry.
Right.
But when you have an organization that becomes a quasi-church, in which they're trying
right.
to supplant the church and trying to do worship services, administer the sacraments, those sorts of things, start to step in and do
right.
the work of the church, the work that God has given for the church to do, then
right.
we have issues. Eric, I wanted to ask you, related to that, what are some of the things that Sunday Breakfast does that really the church is not equipped to do, neither probably should they do them?
Sure. First, I just wanted to say in response to your comments that I do think we work hand in hand with the church. Everyone who comes and speaks at one of our services is required to submit an application with a reference from their pastor. And every person who is in one of our long-term recovery programs is required to attend a local church of their choice, but very much saying that, yes, they're getting teaching and they're hearing messages at the mission, but that's not enough for them. We very much recognize that they need to be in fellowship with a church on Sundays.
Yeah.
But I also think that we serve lots of functions. Churches aren't equipped to feed people three times a day and to house people. We serve more than 120,000 meals a year. That's just not something that churches can do.
Right.
Absolutely.
And neither does a church often. I mean, very oftentimes many people are well-intentioned and want to help homeless people, but you hear stories of people inviting them into their house. They might invite a drug addict into their house, and you know, the drug addict might be very nice and friendly, and the next thing you know, they stole a bunch of stuff from their home. And people are just
right.
naive sometimes about the way that addictions can get a hold of you and make you do things and deceive people in order to get
right.
some financial gain so you can buy more drugs.
Right.
Hate to be cynical, but this is, you have to have a
right.
thick, you have to be loving in the city, but you have to also have a thick skin in this type of ministry.
Absolutely.
But that's something that the mission will have expertise in, understanding how to deal
right.
with people with HIV, with AIDS, or how to deal with addicts and how to guard against being taken advantage of, but yet still minister to them and try to provide for their needs and also try to get them plugged into a local church. So I think it can be, when it's done correctly, just a great partnership between the two organizations. And the church really
100%.
Needs to be focused about preaching and teaching the gospel. And if
right.
if you're constantly worrying about, you know, feeding three meals a day, that's a good thing for the church to be worried about. But if there can be a parachurch ministry to handle that sort of thing, and the church can focus on, you know, making disciples of men, then I think that's
right.
that's really where we need to focus our time.
Yeah, that's we're working hand in hand, and I agree with you 100%. I think that's the best situation, and I really appreciate what Erica said about people being encouraged to go to local churches. I think that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you, Bill, I mentioned the idea of having a thick skin, and how do you, in diaconal ministry, or how have you sought to bring your deacons up in terms of wanting to help people, but also not become too cynical when somebody gets taken advantage of? Or do you have any measures that you put into place in order to protect against people just coming in for a couple services, getting some cash, and then leaving? I mean, how do you
yeah.
address that sort of thing in the city?
Well, it's happened frequently, and our church has begun to just tell people over the years that we have to get to know you over a period of time, and We try not to have an individual make a decision about a request. We try to have it at least discussed among the deacon and someone else and potentially the session, several people involved in making those decisions. And oftentimes it's wait, you know, we have to get to know you because you hear so many stories. Amazing the variety of stories that you hear.
And, pretty creative
and people's
people.
Ability.
I can understand that.
We had a hot dog outreach in back of our church, and we gave people a hot dog and some bottled water with a verse about living water printed on it, and we shared the gospel with them verbally, and we gave them some materials. And about 6 months later, one of the men who was there came into our church with a wrap around his leg and a doctor's paper, and basically saying that he needed some help financially, and said, you know, in no uncertain terms that he would consider himself to be an evangelist. But when I questioned him on the gospel, he really didn't understand it. And so this was an example of someone who just kind of decided he was going to put our church in his mental file, and then he was going to stop back later at a time when he thought maybe we had forgotten, you know, that we had interacted with him before. And I think a lot of people are doing that. They're going from church to church and just trying what they can. And they're not really interested in the means of grace. They're more interested in, you know, making a buck. And I think you have to realize that, you know, if the Holy Spirit is drawing someone, you'll be able to see some actual viable interest over a period of time.
Do you guys...
So we try not to act too fast.
Yeah.
Do you tend to give more... material assistance, like if someone's hungry, you would give them a box of food or a voucher for a grocery store as opposed to a check?
Oh, absolutely. Oftentimes we don't have it, but I have given people some items out of our refrigerator when we've had them, and we've participated with Skilton House in the Thanksgiving baskets through Operation Brotherhood over the years. Dr. Skilton was actually involved in our church in the early days quite heavily. And we try to identify some people who can use that. But, right, we don't give people cash. But even boxes of food can be sold. Oftentimes that's what people are trying to do. So.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I learned when I came to Philadelphia. You know, I worked at a mission in Peoria, Illinois, which was a lot tamer than where I work. In Philadelphia, and I didn't know all the things that could be sold, but at some point, in good faith, you just have to believe that hopefully you'll be helping someone.
Well, yeah, and we trust the sovereign God who is able to use gifts that are given in good conscience from a believer for his purposes, and sometimes he is impressing on someone that there are coals of fire on their head, you know, and they begin to experience some pangs of conscience they wouldn't otherwise experience because they've received it from a church. And this is what I find in the city. It's so amazing. People have a high view of the church in some respects, and a high view of pastors in some respects. And it doesn't stop them from trying to manipulate churches, but then... when they do, there's a sensitivity that they have, and I think we look for those open opportunities to discuss with them, you know, really what's going on. You know, why are you trying to do this in the church? You know, isn't it a problem spiritually? So.
Now, Erica, could you tell us more about the recovery program and how that works logistically and really what the purpose of it is?
Yeah, sure. We're actually in the midst of... looking at some best practices and trying to start something new. We actually just started a Celebrate Recovery group at Sunday Breakfast. There are some all over the country, and it's a pretty well-proven method of recovery. But the main point is that this is a biblically-based recovery program. A lot of these guys have been through other things that are run by the city or other nonprofits, but we believe that unless the addiction is replaced with a relationship with Jesus Christ, that, you know, they're probably always going to return to the addiction. And they might anyway, but without Christ, they have no hope of ever breaking free from that addiction. And so it starts out with focusing on the addictions, and not everybody's addicted. There are other issues too. And so we also focus on life skills, and we have a learning center, so people get help with their education. We'll do an assessment for them if they need to get their GED. We can help. We have tutors that help with that. And we'll also help with job interviewing and getting a job. And the final step is that hopefully at the end of a year, people have a job. They stay with us for a couple months, save enough money, and then we'd like to help them get an apartment. And also, alumni support is something that's important. We have an alumni group that meets and...
Alumni from the actual program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That provides support. And Wayne Hall is particularly good at this.
Wayne Hall being the facility in Germantown that's for women, long-term women's recovery.
Yeah, they meet. They meet every other month, and they get a box of food, and I think they get diapers, too, if they come. And so... they actually get to request what sort of training they want, whatever would help them with their life currently. So they've done things like budgeting and cooking classes and different sorts of things like that. Whatever it is that these girls feel that they need to help them maintain their independence and keep going on their own.
One thing I really like about many of these faithful gospel rescue ministries, the one here in Philadelphia, Sunday Breakfast, I should say, there are others, Peoria Rescue Ministries back in Peoria, Illinois, that we were involved in, is just their heart's desire to see people actually affected by the gospel and to bring in ministers and other people from the church in order to help them. But it also is not a naive approach. Now look at the types of things that Paul says in 1st and 2nd Timothy, where you need to work in order to for the church to be able to provide you, when he's speaking about widows and whatnot. And and these programs are not just cheap grace. They do seek to provide for people in their physical needs and to feed them, to clothe them, to provide them a job. Maybe it doesn't pay at first, but they help around and do chores at the mission and whatnot. They're helping men get back on their feet. They're helping them to feel like productive members of society in many cases, and they're teaching them and training them. But they work, and what that work demonstrates is a desire to be helped and also to serve, for them to serve back. And and the way these programs work is really, I think, modeled in a healthy way off of the way Paul sees diaconal ministries.
I'm not trying
to say that the gospel rescue ministries are diaconal ministries, but the principles are the same in terms of how we go about helping people.
I agree. We are very close to the Whosoever Gospel Mission.
Yes.
And they've been very similar in that regard in terms of work. Worked in Roxborough at the Adult Rehabilitation Center with the Salvation Army, and they had a great stress on people working while we went through the program there.
Yeah. Could you tell us more about Whosoever Gospel Ministries? And I know your church has been involved there doing chapel services and those sorts of things.
Sure.
I think that's a great example of a church being involved and helping out and the parachurch wanting to have an actual church come in. What have you done with them, and how have you found your experience?
Well, we've been involved with the Whosoever Gospel Mission for many years. Bob Emberger and Ron there are now PCA ministers, and they preach in a number of different settings, but they are primarily at the mission. And they burned down a few years ago, and they have rebuilt, and it's been a joy for us to be able to continue with the chapel services again and to participate in the annual outreach that we have over there. But also the men who are alumni from the mission have formed a group, and they were meeting at our church for a long time, every couple of weeks when the building wasn't there anymore. And so we developed a very close relationship with them. And there's a man named Sam Carter who just retired from his position over there. And we've had a long time relationship with him. So we have come to find ways in which we would have people from the mission come to our church. We had a staff member from the mission who was part of our congregation who was living there at the mission years ago. And we've also had ongoing contact with people that we've known for many years from time to time who have come back to the mission. And, you know, Grace Fellowship is just down the street. And so it's a wonderful privilege to have that opportunity to have these ongoing contacts with people, because many times you don't know where they go and what they're doing until you get involved with some of these alumni groups and they start tracking people down.
Yeah. I think
that's really good, what Eric is saying about the alumni groups, because it's part of the work of providing accountability for people, seeing how people are growing spiritually, and it gives the church an opportunity to follow them along and make disciples, as we're commanded to do.
Mm.
One of the things that is unique about the Whosoever Gospel Mission, I've talked with Bob Emberger about it, is that they were actually founded by someone with a Reformed background, and that's typically not the case with most rescue missions, but they seem to have maintained somewhat of a Reformed influence throughout the years, and Bob, I believe, has a degree from Westminster, is that right?
Yeah, I think he does. He's had a lot of contact with Westminster. Heather Rice.
Mm-hmm. Well. I know Heather.
She has taken a number of courses over at Westminster, and they're frequently at some of the CCF conferences. In fact, Heather started this some of them. And there's just a lot of cross-fertilization that's going on. And I find Bob to be very reformed in his thinking when I talk to him and preach. I'm very pleased.
Why do you think the Reformed theology has this reputation of being, if I'm going to be a little bit crass, of being a white man, an educated white man's religion? Why is that reputation there, and why have the Reformed not overcome that?
I think that we tend to expect a lot of... a lot of knowledge from our congregations, and we tend to try to cultivate that. And it's possible to leave a seminary like Westminster and just overwhelm people with technical language and just a lot of content. You know, this compressing of theology that I was talking about before. It's not easy, because it requires people to have some kind of a grid in their head, and I don't think that we do well when someone doesn't have the grid. You know, we do well with children who are being catechized and brought up in covenant nurture in the church, but when we have to kind of start from scratch with someone who's grown up in a health and wealth gospel situation, or someone who's coming out of Islam, we tend not to slow down enough, I think, to really teach them to think in a reformed way, not just to speak in a reformed way. So what happens is people begin to speak in a reformed way, and we think they're growing, and then we find out when they face problems that they revert back to the old patterns, the old habits of the Christian life that they've been taught. And I think we need to teach people how to worship the living God, think in a reformed way about all of life, and that takes communication, patience with people, willingness to listen. And I think sometimes we talk too fast and don't listen enough.
Yeah, I think that's a great response, and I think I agree with you on that. We oftentimes do expect too much and aren't willing to really make disciples oftentimes. We part of the problem is the Reformed tradition, I think, it began with educated people in many ways, and it just proliferates itself. And and it's too
but
easy.
I think it gets associated with culture in a way that's not exactly accurate. You know, people think, you know, you have to be Dutch or you have to be Scottish in order to be Reformed. And, you know, it's just not the case.
No, it's not.
And I think we've seen that. as we see the nations growing in Upper Darby, as we see people at Westminster from all over the place, and as we see the gospel going forth to new lands, even our denomination and people embracing the Reformed faith in droves, they're working on eventually sometime having a Presbytery of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
because there's so much work going on in Puerto Rico and it's growing in Cuba.
And in Brazil as
these
well.
These are people who are coming to the OPC and basically saying, we grew up in a Pentecostal situation. We've embraced that. Now we're kind of leaning away from that. We've been looking at your material. Can you come talk to us? And so work is being translated. Dr. Gaffin's materials are being translated into Spanish, and people are coming along and they're embracing it in large numbers. And I think it's just a matter of sometimes translation and communication and patience.
Well, what's
more than anything else?
What's the Spanish word for eschatological?
I'm not good at Spanish. You could ask Brett Malin that question. I'm not really sure.
Now, we've been speaking and using the term urban in a particular way, and not to offend anyone, I realize that there are other challenges within the city as well. And often there are upscale parts of town, and I know that there are certain churches that tend to serve those types of communities. I personally have almost zero experience in that kind of situation. I wondered if either of you had any insights into that, like churches that tend to serve, university communities or wealthier parts of town, those types of things. What are some of the challenges or dynamics that they might have? And how would they relate to other urban churches that aren't in the prosperous area?
Go ahead, Erica. 10th Presbyterian comes to mind just because I know that they are very intentional about their location in the city and ministering to all of the people that are around them. They have a lot of people that attend that church that are very well off, have great jobs, live in the nice parts of town. They also have a lot of younger people, but they also have a service for the homeless, and they're intentional about their outreach into the community. And we've partnered with them to do food drives and things like that. And so I think they're intentional about helping their members to reach out to everyone in the neighborhood.
Hmm. That's great.
Good.
I think that's a good example of a church that tries to use their location and their means in order to help those that need help. But too often we like to create our own communities. You mentioned earlier, Bill, about people's desire to form communities, and that's in many ways a good thing. But oftentimes we form these communities, and it's too easy to say, well, I have the church in the prosperous area. I serve those people. I spend my time with those people, and it's easy just to stay close-knit and together. Same way with us, with the Reformed folk. We oftentimes hang out with the Reformed folk and just stay with ourselves. and it's so important, and there's such an opportunity in the city in particular because there's so many people in such a tight spot that we can minister to all of these people, and God has brought all of these people within the area for the gospel to go forth and for us to be able to minister to all kinds of people where, for instance, in a rural setting, we it would have to look much different.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that happens in the city that really helps churches is that communities change. And sometimes a church is trying to reach out to a particular group of people, and they find that the community changes over. And I think that's where it really tests our ecclesiology. You have to believe that the gospel's for the nations, and we're not just trying to target a specific group of people. We're to take the gospel to all. And the wonderful thing about Germantown is that we're a storefront church, and people wander in. So you can't, unless you're going to lock the doors during each of your worship services, you can't keep yourself from interacting with the community. And then when you step outside, you can immediately have conversations with people. And just walking to my car, I've had so many conversations with people that won't even come in the door of our church, but I'm starting to reach out to them just because I'm in that area at the same time as they are. And one man has wisely said that you should try to start pastoring people in the community, not in a formal sense because they're not on our membership rolls, but to begin to just develop those kinds of relationships.
I think Tim Whitmer,
trust building.
I believe Tim Whitmer will do that. He'll walk around and go to the homes and that are near his church, and you know, knock on the door and say hi and say, "I'm the pastor of this area."
Yeah,
and just introduce himself, and oftentimes it's turned out well.
You know. I think what we need to realize is that there are a large number of people who have been had a very bad experience in a church, and they've experienced some, in many cases, spiritual abuse. I talked to a man in Milwaukee who was selling candy for the pastor. Well, the pastor was driving a very fancy car. And, you know, he just grew up with that kind of impression of a pastor, you know, someone who just kind of makes you go around and sell stuff. And that's the kind of image that a lot of people have, especially in some of the health and wealth churches. And it needs to be broken down through seeing people as they are, and especially if we're there in a crisis, you know, if we're able to come alongside someone. I find people are really open on the streets to praying about deep needs that they have, because, you know, someone's listening to them.
Mm. Well, this is great. This has been a great discussion. I want to thank both of you for joining us. Thank you, Erica, and thank you, Bill, for coming on the program and addressing this issue. I'm so glad we got to tackle it, and I hope we have more of these types of discussions in the future. So thank you.
Thank you.
I want to let people know more information that you can find online. Grace Fellowship does have a website. It's at gracefellowshipopc.org. And Erica's website of her organization is sundaybreakfast.org, or you can find the Association of Gospel Rescue Ministries, or Gospel Rescue Missions, I should say, is at agrm.org, and there you can find rescue ministries that are in your area. If you would like to volunteer or support, or if you would like to call them up and just ask about what they do and how you might help, how you might pray for them, please do that. It's a great organization, and Erica goes to the National Convention every year and is able to talk to many of these people. And it's just a great thing. And if you have a heart for that, or you want to be able to help people with these types of challenges, agrm.org is a great place to go. I do also want to mention the Philadelphia Conference of Reformed Theology 2010. Please sign up for one of these. They're going to be great. There's four of them this year. There's one in Sacramento, one in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Greenville, South Carolina. And also Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Obviously, the Philadelphia Conference on Reformed Theology needs to be in Philadelphia. But the speakers are, this is a pretty impressive list. We've got Joel Beakey, who's going to be at California, Michigan, and South Carolina. Alistair Begg in Michigan. D.A. Carson at California, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. We've got Ligon Duncan, Sinclair Ferguson, Michael Horton, Philip Ryken, and Cornell Venema. So if you would like to attend this, please visit alliancenet.org. And right on the front page, you'll see a picture of the banner, and you can click on it and find out all sorts of information. The subject or the title of the conference is These Last Days, A Christian View of History. The Sacramento one, I'll tell you before we leave, is March 5th through 7th. So that's over. The Grand Rapids one is March 19th through 21st, which is this weekend. But Greenville, sign up if you haven't already and you would like to go and going to be in the area. It's April 16th through 18th. And then the Philadelphia Conference is April 30th through May 2nd. So please visit alliancenet.org for more information and get your ticket and attend these conferences and learn and grow and be equipped. Well, you can find out more information about what we're doing at reformedforum.org. We have all sorts of links and information about our other programs, our podcast feeds that you can subscribe to get our programs automatically downloaded to your computer. We've got a lot of great stuff going on, and we thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.